Welcome back to Yesterday's Indianapolis, a podcast about the over 200-year history of the Circle City. My name is Ed Fujawa. I'm a local attorney and historian and writer of the Indianapolis history blog, class900indy.com. Now, before we dive into today's topic, a brief apology. When I started this podcast, I had intended to do about 2 episodes a month, and over the past 2 months, that's really not been the case. I think the last time I did a podcast was back in August. Unfortunately, September and October, not only have they been flying by, but things have been rather hectic. There was a vacation in there. I day job responsibilities. I had a series of historical lectures in September, not only locally, but also at a couple locations around the state. So that took up some time. And perhaps most notably, in late August, I received a contract for a new book called The Hidden History of Indiana. And this is with the same publisher that I went through with my first book, Vanished Indianapolis, back in 2023. This is going to be, my focus has always been on Indianapolis, the metropolitan area, but this is going to be much broader. This is going to be looking for the, hidden history stories, stories that locals may know, but generally the rest of us may not be aware of, but we're going to be looking at that on a statewide basis. So I've been doing a lot of research and writing towards that book. Well, the release date's probably going to be sometime late next year, perhaps around this time next year. So keep an eye out for that. That's really been monopolizing my time, and it has kind of prevented me from getting as much content out there on not only Class 900 Indy blog, but also Yesterday's Indianapolis podcast. So we're still going to be doing some episodes and some blog posts, but they might not be as frequent over the next few months as I'm working on this book. I'm mentioning historical lectures around the state. I do have an upcoming event I want to promote briefly. On November 8th, in partnership with Indy Parks and Indiana Humanities, I'll be doing a kind of a hiking tour of the old Indianapolis Zoo site at Washington Park on the northeast side. So the Indianapolis Zoo's, the modern Indianapolis Zoo's first site was at Washington Park, opened back in the 1960s, and then it closed in the late 1980s when the current zoo in White River State Park opened. So we're going to hike around the park, look at some of the remnants of the zoo, which are still on site, and talk about the history. And hopefully some folks will be there who can share some of their memories of the zoo. I've certainly run into a lot of people who attended the zoo. Myself, I didn't move to the city until the year that the zoo closed, so I did not have a chance to visit the Washington Park Zoo. But I know there's still a lot of folks around who spend a lot of time there, either as a child or with their families. So again, that's going to be November 8th. I will drop a link to the information page in the show notes. So the topic of today's podcast is relevant because we're coming into late October and November, and November 11th is Armistice Day, also known as Veterans Day, but originally it was to celebrate the end of World War I, and this podcast has a World War I Indiana connection. So what we're talking about today is a gentleman by the name of Carl J. Schoen. Now, Schoen was a Indiana native. He was born in Indianapolis in 1894. He graduated from Manual High School and then also graduated from Purdue University. In May 1917, he married Lorraine Luft of the city. Her family lived in the Ravenswood area. And the wedding announcement noted that the wedding was supposed to have been in June of 1917, but he had joined the Army. And the next day, the day after the wedding, he was to leave for Fort Benjamin Harrison for reserve officers training. He went through training, was commissioned as a lieutenant, and he joined the 139th Aero Squadron and was deployed to France. So he was a fighter pilot. Kind of cut to the chase, unfortunately, Lieutenant Schoen was killed in combat. And the way I kind of discovered, before we dive into some of his service history, the way I discovered Mr. Schoen was about a decade ago. Well, for a while, I was really into mountain biking. I was doing a lot of cycling around the state, primarily mountain biking, doing a lot of mountain bike racing. And I would often train over at Fort Benjamin Harrison because the state park has some mountain bike trails which were constructed by the Hoosier Mountain Bike Association. And one of the trails is called Schoen Creek Trail. And as you would expect, there is a small creek which runs through the trail area, and it's called Schoen Creek. When I was riding, I didn't really think much of that. However, I also do, or I used to, when I was training, I would do rides around Crown Hill Cemetery. And one day I was out for a training ride and I rode past a monument. It's on one of the on the outer road, actually right up against Boulevard Place. And the monument said Schoen. So I pulled a U-turn, went back, you know, kind of triggered that memory knowing that there was a Schoen Creek Trail. And went back to the marker and around it, it's a main family, kind of a central marker for the family. And then there's several grave sites around it. And one of those grave sites was for a Carl J. Schoen. And it says 1894 to 1918. And then it has a crest with wings on it, United States kind of shield with wings, which was a symbol of the Air Corps at the time. And it says Lieutenant 139 Aero Squadron killed at Verdun, France. So this led me to dive into his history. And indeed, Carl Schoen was deployed to France in 1918. You know, the United States had only got into the war in 1917. But in 1918, he was flying over the Western Front. He apparently did quite well. He was credited with between either six or seven kills, aerial combat kills. Sources kind of vary on that. But he did receive a Distinguished Flying Cross for efforts during a engagement in early October of 1918. And remember, the war ends in November, on November 11th. So, you know, October, early October, we're heading into the last month of the war, even though, of course, at the time, they did not know about that. Unfortunately, Schoen was killed in combat, but his final engagement was something of legend almost. We actually have a very good description of his final aerial combat thanks to an observer's report, an observer who was on the ground, and I want to kind of go through that report here today. But the individual who was on the ground was Lieutenant Felix A. Lesser. And Lesser's actually, he was an artilleryman, but he actually has an interesting history. Subsequent to the war, he becomes really involved in zoos and was the first director of the Baltimore City Zoo. But that's a side issue here. But this Felix Lesser was at an ammunition dump near the front when he observed the dogfight, which involved Carl Schoen, which ultimately resulted in his death. And what Lesser did was, after observing this fight, he wrote a letter to Carl Schoen's mother describing in detail what he had observed. So he notes that, quote, "On the afternoon of October 29th, I was in an advanced ammunition dump getting powder when three German planes came over bent on destroying the dump, as they had tried two nights previous but without success. Almost instantly, two American planes appeared and flew straight towards the enemy. Quite a few shots were exchanged, and one of the Boche was a term that the Americans used for Germans in World War I, and one of the Boche was seen to lose control, his machine tumbling over and over and finally crashing to the ground in what once had been a city." And he notes that he can't mention what the city is because of wartime censorship, and there'd be censors who would go through mail and scratch out or cut out any identifying details in the letters for security purposes. So Lesser continues. He states that, quote, "Then they seemed to pair off, your son and a Boche and the other American plane with the remaining German machine. At first, the fighting went on high up in the sky, then gradually they came lower, and I could distinguish with the aid of my field glasses the aviators, one in each American plane, which were nothing but small scouting machines, and two, an aviator and an observer in each of the German machines, which meant that each Boche plane could handle four machine guns to our one," end quote. So what Lieutenant Lesser is talking about here is that the Americans at this time, Schoen and his wingmen, were flying scouting machines, which were basically single seat planes, usually just had one machine gun, fast and agile, but fairly light. The German planes were larger, heavier, and they actually had two occupants. One was the pilot, who controlled a machine gun, and then usually a straightforward firing machine gun, and then also an observer who either had their own like turret mounted machine gun or carried a machine gun or carried a rifle or some other weapon that they could use to shoot. They were usually in the back of the plane or sometimes in a seat to the front of the pilot, but they could swivel around and shoot different directions. So what he's saying, with the two German planes, there were four total machine guns versus the Americans two. So Lesser continues stating, quote, "Suddenly a wing collapsed on an American plane, and it was a pathetic sight to see it whirling round and round like a piece of paper dropped from a great height, shining like silver as the rays of the late afternoon sun fell upon it, finally falling over the next hill, a pile of wreckage, and its pilot, a Lieutenant Phillips, I believe, killed before the fall as two machine gun bullets had pierced his head," end quote. So Lesser might be getting a bit dramatic with the description of the shootdown. But he continues noting that, quote, "I turned my attention to the other American machine, which, as I found out later, was piloted by your son. He was splitting about even. First he would be on top, and then the Boche, both planes maneuvering for the most advantageous position. But as the minutes sped by, one could tell he was putting on a losing but game fight. They drove him down until barely 300 yards separated him from the ground. The odds were against him. Four machine guns and two men against one machine gun and one man in a much smaller plane. But your son was game. Had the sort of stuff in him that has made the Germans more afraid of the Americans than any other nation. He was so near the ground that he could have landed and could have been alive today, but to quit then after he had seen his brother aviator shot down was not in him. Instead of quitting, he pulled hard on his steering lever and his little machine bounded straight up under his adversary. At the same time, his machine gun must have jammed, for I saw him pull his pistol and fire several shots, one or more being effective as a German observer dropped limp in his seat, and I thought for a moment that he would come out victorious, but a sudden burst from the Boche's machine gun broke your son's arm, and losing control, his machine started into a fatal nosedive, and as it did, I saw your boy fire several more shots with his pistol at the then-departing Boche, and when we picked him up, he still had the automatic pistol clasped tightly in his right hand, brave boy that he was, fighting till the last, end quote. So, unfortunately, Schoen was struck during the dogfight, but as described by Lieutenant Lesser, even as his plane was starting its death dive, he still had his pistol in his hand and was still shooting at the Germans as they made their escape. So Lesser continues on, and I should note that this letter was actually published in the Indianapolis Star on Wednesday, November 27th, 1918. That's why we have such a detailed account. But Lesser continues, noting that, I quote, "I also had the satisfaction of seeing our anti-aircraft guns make a direct hit on the retreating Boche and saw his machine crumple and crash to the earth about 1 kilometer from the spot where your son fell, am enclosing a small strip of the camouflage wing of the German plane," end quote. So in World War One, the planes were typically wooden framed with taut like fabric and stretched over them. So what he did was, Lieutenant Lesser went to the crash site and actually cut off a piece of that camouflage fabric from the exterior of the German plane and mailed it back to Mrs. Schoen. Lesser concludes his note by saying, quote, "I did not know your son, but I was sure that you would appreciate the details of your son's death, and as soon as I am permitted, I will send a map showing the exact location of his last resting place. In closing, I wish to say that he was a man through and through, and you may well afford to be proud of your boy, as he died fighting for the right cause, and died game until the very end," end quote. So Schoen's body was recovered, and he was buried in France, and then later reinterred at the Meuse-Argonne American Cemetery in France, and that's where his remains sit today. Now, he has a grave in France, and it's a white cross, which says Carl J. Schoen, 1st Lieutenant, 139th Aero Squadron, Indiana, October 29th, 1918. Now, of course, as I mentioned earlier, there's also the headstone at Crown Hill, which notes about the same information. However, that is what's called a cenotaph, which is basically a empty grave or monument just put up in memory and honor of a person, but whose remains are not there, as he is buried in France. And there's actually a picture I ran across during my research for this of his mother visiting the grave in France. As I noted, Lieutenant Schoen had been married in May of 1917 to Maureen Luft. They did have a daughter named Virginia, who was born in February of 1918. It's unclear whether or not Schoen ever meant his daughter, considering his training and his deployment to France, but she was noted to be 10 months old at his death, and at the time, his widow and daughter lived at 5201 North College Avenue, which I believe is a northeast corner of the intersection of 52nd Street and College, where the Habigs, there's a former Habigs like garden shop there and like a two-story brick building. I believe the two-story brick building is where they lived at the time of his death. Now, his widow, Maureen, eventually remarried and moved to California. For Schoen, his memory was continued on here in the city, aside from the cenotaph at Crown Hill. In 1922, an airfield was constructed at Fort Benjamin Harrison, and it was dedicated and named for Lieutenant Schoen. It was called Schoen Field, and it operated for the next 40-some years And there's actually a chapter in my book, Vanished Indianapolis, which explores the history of Schoenfield along with the history of Stoutfield. So if you want to know about the operational history of that airfield, some of the notable events that occurred there, you know, check out that chapter in Vanished Indianapolis. But I will say the airfield was located where the Army's finance center, or the might be military finance center in general, but the large finance center, Department of Defense Finance Center, is located on 56th Street just south of the state park. It's this massive building that takes up quite a large chunk of land, but that's where the airfield was located. So again, check out Vanished Indianapolis if you want to hear some more history or read some history about the airfield itself. And thank you for listening to this episode of Yesterday's Indianapolis. As I said, episodes might be fewer and farther between here in the next few months as I'm working on researching my new book, but I will certainly make an effort to at least get an episode out a month, and we'll go from there. But again, thank you very much for listening.